Halloween is the comfort watch of horror films. You know exactly what's going to happen. It's got like all the best things that you like about horror film.
It is just an iconic film for so many reasons, from the horror element, the things it created, to its villain, its music, its protagonist. And I feel like it's one of those films that's stood the test of time.
It is iconic. I mean, my favourite thing about it is the opening sequence. It's just chef's kiss. It's fantastic. It's just so memorable. The score, everything. The mask, like I said, the whole thing is just, it's a horror classic, and so many horror films have borrowed from it. So yeah, it's amazing. I love it.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this episode of Flix Watcher Podcast. Today I'm joined by Helen.
Hello.
Lucy.
Hello.
Sean.
Hey there.
And we're all going to be talking about Halloween.
Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to Flix Watcher Podcast. Our guests today are Sean and Lucy. Over to you, please, Lucy, to introduce yourself and tell our listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Yeah, of course. So thank you for having me, for a start. I am senior writer for a website called What to Watch, where I basically talk about film and TV for a living. It's a brilliant job.
You could do this for a living, you say?
I do, yeah. It's my day job, yeah. Can you believe that?
Helen, we need to make this a living.
Tell us your secrets.
I don't know. But outside of that, I don't stop there. I do have a podcast of my own, which is about TV. It's called TV Time. I invite people on to talk about their favourite TV shows and their favourite drinks. And it's gone down very well. It was a lockdown baby, and I'm very proud of it. So, yeah, that's basically me. Yeah.
There's been a lot of lockdown baby podcasts, haven't there?
There has. It was a boredom thing, but I've kind of carried it on outside of lockdown, so.
And how do the TV shows pair with the drinks? How often are they alcoholic or non-alcoholic, or is it completely random?
They can vary. So I send a little form out to my guest, obviously checking if they do drink for a start, because some people don't. And then they let me know what they want to do, and we just kind of wing it. So, for example, we've had like The Simpsons and red wine. We've had It's a Sin and Tea. We've had a chocolate milkshake. And
I don't know why that made me laugh.
Come Dine With Me. It doesn't really have any correlation. It's basically just the person's favourite drink, what they would choose to, like, you know, come home from work, open and watch a TV show. What would they have when they watch that is the premise of it, basically. So just a little fun little sort of little chat between me and another person, which I really enjoy.
It's the same as one of my favourite TV shows that year. I don't know what else I would pair it with. Tea seems more than appropriate. I don't know why it made me laugh so much.
They do drink quite a bit of tea, don't they, in that? They sort of sit around that big table and drink tea.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
there is no correlation between the drinks and the shows, but it's just fun to get a little insight into someone's personality, I guess. Like, what do you like to drink? It says a lot about you, I think. So that's kind of was the idea.
And yourself, Sean, who are you?
Hello, I am Sean, and I have started writing over the past year or so, a blog of my own, reviewing films, TV shows, talking about kind of what's going on in the media, stuff with games as well, one that I've just kind of grown a bit slowly. It's, again, kind of a lockdown baby nearer the end. So it's one of those. I haven't quite gone to podcast level yet, but who knows? We'll see.
It seems like an inevitable step.
I don't know. At this point, doesn't it?
the toddler stage of the lockdown baby blog, perhaps.
It does, yeah. It eventually ages, and it's one of those things where I almost dread. It's one of those things where you dread hearing yourself, and I'm like, oh no, people will hear my voice, but here I am anyway.
What's it like writing the blog in a regularly?
Oh, I love it. People have to listen to actually what I have to say. Or not, it's up to them. But I will just rant away anyway into the ether. And it's a great way to kind of get your thoughts out and share what you think is kind of be big, be not. Love talking about those kind of underrated films that maybe not many people think are going to be up there, but actually end up making a bit of a splash. And yeah, I've really enjoyed it.
Well, yeah, I completely get that cathartic nature of like just getting stuff out into ethers. It helps to clear your head, doesn't it? If you can create the time and space in doing so, then it's, well, power to you. Well, you're the one that you chose Halloween, Sean. First of all, can you tell us why you chose it? And then I'm going to get time where you've got 60 seconds to give the synopsis in case anyone doesn't know what it's about.
Okay, so I chose Halloween because it is just an iconic film for so many reasons, from the horror element, the things it created, to its villain, its music, its protagonist. I feel like it's one of those films that's stood the test of time. This man, Michael Myers, is known as the Boogeyman and stalks the town of Haddonfield on Halloween night and preys upon a babysitter named Laurie Strode, who is in for kind of the night of her life when she encounters what is known as the Shape. And he stalks his victims with just himself, his iconic music, and a knife, and makes quite a splash throughout the evening.
A splash of claret. First question is, how many times have you guys seen this film? Go to yourself first, Sean, since you brought it to us.
It's got to be in double digits now, I think. Probably, oh, wow. I'd say we're at about 12, 13.
Lucy?
Not that many, about 5 probably off the top of my head.
Helen?
Yeah, I'm probably 5, 6. More times that I've kind of like not counted, I think. You know, when you're like, I can't remember.
Yeah. This is my first time watching it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And as listeners know, someone says horror, I'm not fussed about it. Although I should have watched it before because it's one of those films that it leans so heavily into lots and lots of pop culture. And I know all the references. I know Michael Myers. I know, you know, it was a sight gag in Baby Driver, which is a film that we reviewed recently, for example. The mask is iconic. The music's iconic. We've had John Carpenter, we've had two other films at least, with Christine and The Thing. And this guy is, you know, as a director, he's phenomenal. But yeah, I just never got around to it. I wasn't that interested. And well, let's see what my thoughts later on in the discussion. But Lucy, what are your thoughts on Halloween in general? You've seen it 5 times, which means you must like it-ish, at least.
I do like it. It's very much a sort of, tradition to sort of watch it on Halloween. Like, obviously, I have had more than 5 Halloweens in my life. But, you know, I think if it is on the TV, for example, around Halloween, I will stick it on. You know, I watch all the sequels, good and bad. It is iconic. I mean, my favourite thing about it is the opening sequence. It's just chef's kiss. It's fantastic. It's just so memorable. The score, everything. The mask, like you said. The whole thing is just, it's a horror classic, and so many horror films have borrowed from it. So yeah, it's amazing. I love it.
Helen?
I wish I could remember the first time I watched it, but it was quite a long time ago. I think Halloween is probably like the comfort watch of horror films. It's one of the ones that you kind of like know exactly what's going to happen. It's got like all the best things that you like about horror film, and it's 131 minutes. So it's just over 90 minutes, but only by one minute. And
131 minutes would be 2 hours and 11 minutes. Sorry, do you mean 91
minutes? 1 hour 31. I can't read my own writing. So what's that?
91 minutes.
91. There we go. It's a good length. That's what I'm trying to say. And yeah, I think you've kind of like covered it all. But the music is, you know, John Carpenter, he just loves to do like a little funky old tune for his film. And this is one of his best. I haven't seen all of the sequels. I kind of feel that maybe as more are released, it's sort of like chips away at the greatness of the original. So I kind of like want to keep it as pure as possible, but keen to know any ones that you think are worth watching.
And yourself then, Sean?
Yeah, so I mean, I've always been a bit of a horror fan, so I kind of loved it from the start. I watched it probably too young an age that I should have. It's one of those films that you walk in, your parents are watching it and you're sat there, and the first time you're watching it, you probably don't process what's going on as much, but you still like it. And just, I love the kind of legacy it's left for the kind of horror franchise as a whole. And I think especially as slasher horror has started to come back into the fray a little bit, I feel that, you know, it was after Halloween and Friday the 13th it started to become very overdone, and so it was just left for a long while, and now it's really starting to re-enter the horror genre. So I've kind of fallen back in love with it as well.
Do you guys find it scary?
Scary is the wrong word. I think tense. There are tense points, like Helen said, it's that kind of comfort watch of horror. Like you're not, I mean, the first one, when you first watch it, you do experience something new, but kind of subsequently onwards, you know what you're getting yourself into. And it's one of those ones where you enjoy being that jump scare that comes when he pops out the shadows or the music blasts. And it's one that, you know, you could play every trope, but it was the original for all these tropes.
The bit where he's hiding in the bushes, I mean, that's always like, and yes, it is.
What I always found the scariest bit, and I don't know if any of you saw it as much, I only found out about it probably a couple of years ago, that Michael Myers himself is in a lot more scenes than I originally thought. So there are scenes where the police are talking and he's still in the car in the background, and it never focuses on it. He's just in the car watching them, and then he turns off camera. So it's just that presence. He's always there. And then kind of subsequently onwards, you start looking for him, even in places he's not, because you're just expecting him to come out of nowhere.
Yeah. I think the cool thing about Michael Myers as well is that as a villain, you know, we have a lot of jump scares these days when it's like something screaming in your face or something like that. Michael is just completely silent. And for some reason, that's scarier to me. You know, like you say, when he's sort of always around, you're always waiting for him to pop out. He doesn't have to scream in your face. It's just that mask. You're like, I'm out, I'm done. So it's very much the suspense and the tension building more than pure horror, I think. But again, you know, I mean, I'm not a massive fan of repeated jump scares anyway, so I think Halloween has the right balance. But yeah, it's just, it's great.
I mean, as we record this, Netflix has apparently broken the Guinness World Record for the number of jump scares. That's literally the only title I've seen as it came up.
I don't know
what that means. I didn't read into it.
The Midnight Club, the new Mike Flanagan series.
Right. Okay.
Who
did Haunted Hill House and
Bly Manor. Yeah, all those. Yeah. So yeah.
So I need to watch those because everyone says they're genuinely excellent. Is to bang the same drum with my horror things. A lot of horror I find ropey.
Quite a lot of it is one, ropey. So yeah. I mean, I think you're right to say that. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of trashy horrors.
Yeah, and this one, I feel unjustified in saying this, but I find this one a bit ropey as well. But I think that's just fair. Simply the benefit of this. I'm watching this for the first time over 40 years old, and I've been watching TV and film since I was, you know, year zero, and I've watched like lots of things, and I can see the imprint of this film in lots of different things. And I feel that I should have watched it when I was younger, you know, to get the full gist of it. So I think it's solely kind of my fault in that, you know, I watched it so late in life after being a semi-cine-literate person. But yeah, I can see the shadow this has cast along lots of different films, horror and non-horror. So I think that's mainly my fault. And I think that's why it's about it being scary to you guys, because, you know, when did it come out, in the 70s?
Is it 78?
78, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if sensibilities have changed so much, because, like, I mean, still Alien, for example, for me is like terrifying, but this wasn't so for me. And I don't know if that was necessarily the point, or just the kind of the overall ethos of the legend of this person. And like you said, I can't remember who said it, even though it was like 5 minutes ago, the start of the film is like horrific. Oh,
yeah.
And maybe that's part of it. It's like, it didn't quite live up to the rest of that for me, but yeah, maybe. That's kind of where I'm at in the Dragon's Den. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely argue that it's sort of dated, because like you say, it is from the 70s, and we have, with horror, there's a reliance on things like CGI and bigger budgets and things like that now. So you could definitely argue that. And I do think, like you say, if you compare it to like a modern day horror, the vibe is so different. But, you know, it's still, you know, it's still one of the greats. It's still like kind of the one that other slashers look up to influence their own projects. Yeah. And like you say, that like that opening, like I said earlier, is just, is absolutely brilliant. Like, it's one of the best point of view sort of kills I've seen ever. I don't think I've ever seen anything quite that good, to be honest.
I think the reveal that it's a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Is astonishing.
Yeah.
The annoying thing is, though, is once you've watched it the once, it's never quite as impactful again. Because you're just fully aware of what's going on. The first time you watch it and you think you are just getting that POV from a slasher, a killer, you know, this typical someone breaking into a teenage girl's house to kill them. You kind of, you know the book, you could write it easily. And then for it to kind of get flipped and they take the mask off and it's just this little child in the clown costume, it was just great. But yeah, I think once you've seen it the one time, it will never truly hit as hard again.
Get that double whammy of serial killers and clowns.
Yeah. And children.
Yeah.
So just a lot going on.
Golden triangle of horror.
Yeah, clowns. There's too many clowns in, there's lots of clowns in horror, isn't there? I mean, I think modern horror is, and I always almost want to do the air quotes when I say horror, because there's so many subgenres within that. And I tend to like zombie films. Helen's recently watched Train to Busan for the first time, which I think is one of my favourite films ever. You weren't so first, based on our chats on our WhatsApp group. And I think I thought it was delightful. And then you got the things that kind of Blumhouse do, ranging from The Purge through to Get Out. You know, I think it's really interesting. So I feel I almost, you know, lumping horror into one bucket like it's a monolithic thing is a bit unfair. And one thing I really like about what horror does in general, again, putting into one bucket, is that you do get the production houses like Blumhouse who can turn around the film for quite cheaply and will get a lot of people watching it. And one of my favourite cinema experiences during before lockdown happened was The Invisible Man, for example. I thought that was a delightful film, one of the best things to see in a cinema. So I should stop lumping it all in one bucket. I mean, Mike Myers, guys, is he the guy for horror? Is he the main horror guy? Is it Freddy? Is it, I don't know, the Alien Queen? Who we got there? Who's vying for that medal?
I mean, I think especially if you're thinking human rather than kind of, if we start going into alien types of, always have the debate of Alien, Predator, or The Thing. It becomes a kind of whole other, like you said, almost a whole other subgenre in itself. But I think when it comes to just people, it's got to be Michael Myers. Like, I think he's kind of a household name to an extent. Like, you know who you're talking about. Whereas, you know, you still do with Freddy and Jason, I guess. But for me, yeah. Especially as technically his name in the films is always just The Shape. He's not technically Michael Myers.
Okay. I've never seen Friday the 13th, so I've never seen Jason either. I do need to watch these, at least the first ones of each ones, to catch up.
I was going to say, it's become a long list. I think they're at about 14 Friday the 13th films.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just watch the first one, honestly. you don't need any more.
The first one's the only one you need. I think the thing with Michael Myers is he doesn't really do much except kind of like look, and he's a bit stabby, and he doesn't really... And he could kind of, his special, I guess, like if we had like top Trump's horror cards, like his special skill would be getting back up again. Cause like that's kind of what he does. And like we've already said, like he doesn't really talk. So you can't really like have a chat like you can with Ghostface. And he doesn't like have any one liners. He just kind of breathes a bit and he's got his mask. He's not very good with fire. So yeah, he's kind of the weird, freaky kid grown up to be someone who gets up a lot after he's been stabbed and could like survive falling.
I'd love to see, so top Trump's card, one of your categories is gets up a lot factor. So for Michael Myers, it's at least 90.
Yeah.
I think that's what it sounds like. But what are his other characteristics? Stabbiness. It's not actually that good. It's not that good at stabbing, I don't think.
It's probably that mask he's wearing. He can't see out of it.
Yeah.
No, he's endearing, I think Michael is. I don't think he's that scary. I think it's quite endearing. I mean, I'd probably say, I mean, in terms of like terror, Freddy, just because of like the age of you first watching Freddy, it's fucking terrifying. And that he comes when you're asleep.
You can't escape him, exactly.
Yeah. And I think it was that breaking, wasn't it? Of dreams are always meant to be that safe space. You make them, it's your own mind. And for that kind of, safe space to be broken completely by this Freddy character was like, right, I'm never sleeping again then.
Pretty much.
Freddy was the one I've had to wake up from dreams because of it. I need to be able to get out of my dream if Freddy comes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely the one. Nightmare on Elm Street was the one I watched as a kid. I was like, I need to do this, guys. I need to do this. And when you just see, if you have Freddy, Jason and Michael just on a poster together, Freddy's the scary one, isn't he? He's got disfigured face and the shark claws. And, you know, Michael and Jason both had him behind a mask. They're kind of faceless, so they seem less threatening, I guess, in a way. And Jason was always like...
You can't really identify them. But like Michael and Jason could be anyone, whereas you know Freddy, you know the face very well.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Before we go onto the scores, guys, we've talked. There's many iterations and reversions and reboots and requels or whatever we want to call them these days to essentially cash grab. What are your thoughts on the other ones apart from this first one? Where should other people go? And I hear kind of the not the last film, but the previous one before that, Halloween, also called Halloween, was quite good. So, what are your thoughts on the franchise in general?
I mean, I wouldn't recommend any of the ones after the first in the kind of original set, I guess.
Really?
Yeah, Halloween 2, they kind of retcon that in the new 2018 one. So what I tried to do was kind of build on why Michael Myers went for Laurie to kind of say that, oh, they're long lost brother and sister. And so they've got that connection between them. And it just felt like there was no need. And so they really drive into that. He ends up, I think at like one point, possessing his niece to an extent that she starts having killer tendencies. It goes really, really odd up until one point where they film a reality show in the Michael Myers house and then he starts killing them off. I mean, that one's great to watch as a trashy horror film, to be fair. But yes, they go very odd. So I would always recommend the original. And then I do agree that the kind of 2018 Halloween felt like a genuinely good sequel. Halloween Kills, the one after that, less so. But with Halloween Ends coming soon and meant to be the end to it all, we shall see how they kind of round it off, and it might be a good way to have rounded off their story.
Because we have equally in the way that the intro is pretty good. The final scene where Michael Myers is kicked out of the top floor and you expect him to be lying there, but he's not. I mean, I don't know how often that used to happen, but we see that kind of stuff quite a lot now.
Turn away and then you look back and they're gone. I do like how in the 2018 version that's slightly flipped. So there's one point, without giving too much away of that one, there's one point where he pushes Laurie off a building. And then when he turns around, she's gone. It feels like that reverse of she's now the predator and he's the prey. And she's learned from their first encounter.
I think we should talk a little bit of Jamie Lee Curtis, who this would have been one of her earlier roles, certainly her breakout role, and she's still doing it now. I think it's always kind of like a hard role to kind of like play the sort of female in distress in these horror films, because a lot of it just kind of involves screaming and running and stuff. But
is she the original final girl?
Yeah, I think so.
Some say, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are probably more bit indie films around that, but yeah.
Like mainstream, probably, yeah.
Yeah, one of the most prominent ones that, okay. But she also, she's not that, she's got bite, hasn't she? She's not just there.
No, I think especially as the franchise carries on, she's not one of those ones where, you know, they still scream, and kind of like with Scream and Ghostface, each time Sydney comes back a little bit stronger and takes less shit from Ghostface, really.
Yeah.
I feel Laurie's quite similar in that sense. But I think Jamie Lee Curtis is an interesting one, because I think she's had a bit of a love-hate relationship with the franchise herself, because there was points she wanted to be completely done with it, and yet here she is back again, because she didn't fully agree with the way it was going, especially with the way H2O ended, to then follow that up with another sequel. She really wasn't happy about that. So during that franchise section of it, she said she'd only come back if she was killed off. So she has, although a final girl, she has technically been killed off once before.
So you think it's more than just a cash grab, these final installations? There's kind of a reason for going back there?
Yeah, I think maybe some of them were earlier on a bit of a cash grab, but I think she's at the point in her career now where she could have taken it or leave it, when she was asked to do Halloween 2018. And from the way the reception was for the film, I think it was kind of the right call that it was right to do another one and kind of retcon what had come before, to make it a bit more true to the original story.
Well, JLC seems to have had quite a lot of fun in the past couple of years, in Everything Everywhere All at Once, for example. She had a great role in that. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
Yeah, loved it.
So should we head to the scores?
Hello, I'm Kate Lever, host of Who's a Good Dog? The podcast for anyone who's ever loved a dog. We're one of the other podcasts in the Stripped Media family. Each episode, I ask a brilliant person to introduce me to their dog and tell me how having a dog has changed their life. Listen to Who's a Good Dog wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. The scores are always out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish, and we will start with you, please, Sean, with your recommendability.
4.8.
Who wouldn't you recommend it with that point eight? Where does it lose that nugget?
I guess people that just literally have no interest in horror. I think there has to be some sort of appreciation there, maybe not for horror specifically, but for what it's created for future horrors and just future films in general. I mean, as Stranger Things has become a massive thing, I think everyone loved Eddie Munson in Michael Myers mask as he was sneaking away.
I've literally learnt how to play that Metallica song, which I can't remember the song name of, the intro to it, because of Stranger Things. That's how amazing. Pathetic I am.
Master of Puppets, that one.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
Yeah. Da-da. Oh, amazing.
Da-da-da. One day I might post it on the internet.
I thought you were going to get your guitar out now and give us a little...
Look, just so nice. Just got this behind me.
The mic amplifies down there. Guitar's up there.
Love it.
Oh, guys, you missed it. I played Master of Puppets. Unfortunately, you're not going to hear that. We'll go over to Lucy now, who is going to tell us her recommendability score. But first of all, what do you think of my rendition of Master of Puppets?
It was spot on. It was brilliant. It was not perfect. It was great.
3.5.
What I did was I just played Spotify off my phone really loudly.
So I would probably give it 4.5, which I still think is a solid score. I do think that, you know, like Sean was saying, if you have no interest in horror, then it's not for you. You know, you may have already seen clips of it anyway and you just don't fancy watching it because let's face it, it's so iconic. Like, everyone knows it. So if you are a horror fan and you want to delve into it and you've never seen it before, yes, but there's definitely a 0.5% of sort of audience members that it wouldn't be tailored for, if that makes sense. So it's just a strong score, though, I think.
Yeah.
Try to justify that.
No, it's fine. Helen?
I'm going to give it a 4.9. I think it's the OG horror film. Nice. The one which kind of like spawned so much of what we know now. And it kind of is like a little bit, if you're watching it the first time now, you might like have a little bit of a giggle and be a bit like, this isn't very scary, but it's iconic. So I just think that it's just great. And I don't think the series has ever bettered it. And, you know, John Carpenter, you know, he did a lot of like first things. And I think people kind of diss a lot of earlier horror films because they are like a little bit kind of like giggly rather than scary. But yeah, for the time they were making with them, they were like paving the way for what we have now. So yeah, I've got a lot of love for Halloween.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give it a higher score than I would indicate by my saying it's ropey. So I'm going to give it a 4.2. And that is because I really do appreciate the originality at the time and how it has transmuted and become, well, things like Scream, for example. Definitely wouldn't have Scream if it wasn't for this. So I appreciate it. It's more for appreciation and for completion as someone who likes film in general. It's like, yeah, you got to see it. And also, I often take off points for things being too scary or gory, only because it's harder to recommend it to people, but it's not scary, really. I didn't find it that scary or gory either. So especially if you can get over the first 5 minutes, then, you know, you're fine for the rest of it. Repeat viewing score. Sean, go on. I'm expecting big things here.
So for this one, it might come as a bit of a shock, but I'm actually going to give it just a 4 for repeat viewing.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. It is a shock, to be honest.
Only because I think, like Helen said, well, when it comes to kind of the POV and everything, it doesn't get better than that scene. It kind of it comes in at its strongest point, and kind of as talked about previously, that's never more impactful than the first time you watch it. And so it's still a great watch always, but you're never really going to get that shock that you receive the first time. And so I think as each time it goes on, that becomes less and less impactful. And so it can, for some, I think, become a bit of a background watch. You know, you'll see it on the TV on Halloween night. And so while you're chatting away, you'll stick it on. And so I would always watch it over and over again. But I understand that it's can be a bit draining, I guess.
Lucy?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, Sean's pretty much hit the nail on the head. I would give it a 3. Because I think based on the reasons he mentioned, like you're never going to see that POV scene for the first time again. You know what I mean? Like, it's all the first time you watch it, you're like, wow, this is cool. This is horror. This is amazing. Going back, there's not really anything new to take from it. So you've already seen everything that you need to see. So it becomes more of a sort of popcorn with your mates, hanging out Halloween night, watching it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you know, I don't think it's something you would watch and look for Easter eggs or watch and look for something like that. So it's a pretty low score. I appreciate that. But I just think, you know, once you've seen it the first time, I think you've got everything you need to have from it. And it becomes a bit of a background film. But, you know, it's just one of those things.
Helen?
I mean, this is kind of one that I do tend to watch if I'm at home on the actual Halloween date and can't think of something to watch. I'm like, just watch Halloween. Yeah. It's just so simple. But like,
how often do you watch films based on the day that you're on?
Sometimes. Some films are like a Saturday film or a Sunday film. But like Halloween is very specific.
There's that film, that Leap Year, isn't there? What's that one on Leap Year Day?
I haven't seen that one.
Counts down to it. Sat there on her calendar waiting.
Yeah, you got four your calendar specifically so you can do the countdown. 1,800, I don't know how many days between now and next leap year. Yeah, sorry, I interrupted. I apologize.
So it's like if it's a Friday or a Saturday kind of night on Halloween, then like it's got to be Halloween. But if it's like on a Wednesday, I'm a bit like, I can't bother to watch Halloween. Can't bother midweek scares, like.
Mm-hmm. So hence 5 times. But if it, yeah.
So okay. special times in Halloween sports there. Yeah, I mean, I don't think you get that much new from watching it, but it doesn't really take away from my enjoyment of watching it. So a 3.5.
Okay. I'm not sure when I watch it again, I'm never going to say never. Never going to say never. That's poorly worded. But I'm going to say 2.1. I'll probably watch it at some point, but I'm not going to super rush to it. Mm. I do feel I want to watch the 2018 version because lots of people said it's return to form. But
I think I remember watching H2O and quite enjoying that, but that was like when it came out. Yeah. So that was a long time ago. And it probably doesn't make sense that much anymore in relation to the new ones. I don't know.
Small screen score, Sean.
I'm gonna give that one a 4.2. I think it doesn't matter. You don't need a big screen for it. I think the big screen helps with the music and everything, but mm-hmm. I think it's a nice film to watch with friends on Halloween, some popcorn, and you can still get that atmosphere. If it's kind of dead silent in the room still, that it doesn't need the camaraderie of a big screen for it to be as good.
Lucy?
Yeah, I'd say 4. I think I haven't seen it on the big screen. I would love to. It's one of my bucket list big screen films. But again, it just works on the sofa with your mates. It just works as a sort of Halloween night film. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't think the big screen would give it any more or less, you know, what's the word? Just kind of pizzazz. It's going to be good. You know, wherever you watch it, it's going to be good. That's the word.
my brain
was like doing the dial-up tone. I was like, what the word is? You know what I mean? Though, kind of like...
Absolutely.
Atmosphere. She's gesturing. But yes, that's the word I was looking for. But yes, I think a 4 in terms of that.
Helen?
Yeah, so I think like, because horror films were kind of like the forbidden films that you'd kind of like sneakily kind of watch like on a borrowed VHS or late at night when you'd kind of like snuck downstairs, everyone else has gone to bed, put it on and then have nightmares. And then you'd be like, well, that was why I wasn't allowed to watch it in the first place. So kind of watching them on TV at home, having like the general horror invade your house is kind of like it's weird comfort for me. But I kind of maybe would like to go and see it, maybe as part of a bit of a John Carpenter kind of marathon-y type thing or maybe something like that, but not like essential.
King Charles Cinema, John Carpenter marathon.
I think I'm pretty sure they've probably done it. I've just had a quick look, what their Halloween offering is, and they haven't got Halloween this year, but I know they probably have done it before. So I'm going to give it 4.5.
Okay. Yeah, I was watching on the iPad, which is fine. So 4.8. Engagement score, Sean.
3.8, I think. You know, I think it can be, again, very engaging at points, but it kind of depends on when you watch it. Like you said, Kobe, kind of because you watched it later on, you felt like you had seen all these
trends. Later in life.
I thought that was the best way to put it.
I appreciate you trying.
You don't kind of, I guess, appreciate the tropes as much because they are tropes at that point. You know, it's, I've seen all this before. It is your typical slasher. But if you watch it as kind of your first one, it's like, oh my God, what is this? It was the introduction to slasher at the time. And so from that point of view, it's massively engaging. But yeah, if you've watched it after seeing a few slasher horrors, it doesn't offer too much new.
Lucy?
I think I'm going to go 3.5 again, because I feel like I probably could, if I just had it on in the background, turn it off, not going to lie. However, if I was really like invested in it, then I would be having a good time. And I only say this, it sounds like I'm slamming the film. I'm genuinely not. It's like, it's the, you know, I've seen it before. I know all the narrative beats. I know what's coming. So if I wanted to duck out, I would. But, you know, I felt like if I was in the zone, if I was in the moment, I would keep it on. So it's kind of right in the middle of, what would I turn it off? Would I not? Just slap in the middle.
Helen?
Yeah, when you've seen it that many times, you kind of like know when they're just like, just lounging around being a teenagers, and then there's like spooky stuff happening, so you can kind of like zone in and out. So it's kind of like, it was probably like maybe like a 4, high 4 when I watched it the first time, and now it's like kind of like low 3s, so I'll probably go for 3.5 overall.
I'm gonna go for 3.5 as well. I think it's just literally because I didn't know how it was going to end. So there was that kind of intrigue, but that was my first time. So I think in subsequent watches, that will be less, but I'm gauging it purely on this one watch. So that gives us an overall score of 3.92500, which is decent. I expect it to be quite high. It's, you know, it's a good film. Well, other people say, maybe I call it ropey, unnecessarily. So let's head to Twitter, guys. First of all, if you're listening to us and you've not followed us on Twitter, we are at FlixWatcher Podcast. And one of the main reasons to follow us is because we do put a shout out every time we record, asking you guys to give us your thoughts on our shout outs. So look out for a tweet that says something like this. We're reviewing Halloween with Lucy Jade Blueglass, I apologize, and Sean Higg, 4489215. Sean has just joined Twitter specifically for
it's
this
very
podcast.
Long name.
Have you seen it for your thoughts and score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout out on FlixWatcher? So we had one response today. Sean, this is your choice of film. Do you want to take that response?
Yeah. So this is from Claire Ellen Hope. And she says it is an all-time fave, 4 stars, but a classic in every sense. And I couldn't agree more with that statement.
Fantastic. Sean and Lucy, can you sign off by telling everyone where we can find you online, and we'll say goodbye to the listeners?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at TheSofaCinema, or visit my website at thesofacinema.com.
I am at Lucy Jade Bugless on Twitter, or you can follow whattowatch.com and look at my byline and read all my articles. I also have at TV Time Pod, which is the podcast as well. So that's where I am.
Yeah. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much for coming on. Bye.
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 Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.